Welcome to the Six Figure Developer Podcast, the podcast where we talk about new and exciting technologies, professional development, clean code, career advancement, and more. I'm John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash.
With us today is Daniel Roth. Daniel Roth is a principal program manager on the ASP.NET team. His passions include delighting customers by making frameworks simple and easy to use in the cloud. Welcome, Daniel.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So before we get started, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started in the industry?
Sure. So, well, I've been in Microsoft pretty much my entire career, honestly. I came straight out of college, so got lucky there. I got lucky on the college side as well. I applied to as many big name universities as I possibly could and managed to make it squeak into one of them. I went to MIT in Boston. That's where I'm from. I'm from Massachusetts. And that, I think, is what convinced Microsoft to take a chance on me. And I've been here ever since and been loving it. I started out working on a lot of server-side technologies like SOAP services, Azimex, if you remember those things back in the day, ASP.NET web services. I then spent a long time working on WCF, did a little stint with XAML for a while, and now I'm on the ASP.NET team working on web UI frameworks and trying to make building web apps easier for web developers.
So you're a principal manager on the ASP.NET team. What exactly does that entail?
Well, so I'm a program manager is the title of what I do. And what that means is I'm supposed to be the customer advocate. Like, I'm supposed to understand what our customers are trying to do, what they need from our product team, how can we make their lives easier and better, and then try to communicate that to the devs so that they can put it through the engineering grinder, and then something comes out at the end that hopefully will be of use to people. I also spend quite a bit of time then taking the stuff that we ship and the things that we're building and talking to customers about it, trying to help them to use it, understand it, encourage them to adopt it. And that's just part of the dialogue. And then it's just hearing, wow, how's that going? Is this working for you? No, this was terrible. Didn't help us at all. Please go back to the drawing board, and all those types of things. So my primary job is to be a customer advocate. I do get to participate a lot in design with the engineers and discussing how the experience should be, which is super fun. Like, I get to deal with the surface of the product, right? Like, all the place where the user interacts with the product, I get to think real hard about, you know, does this make sense? Is this intuitive? Can they be productive? And all the stuff that goes on underneath, you know, making it performant and secure and making sure that the code's maintainable. I don't have to worry about any of that stuff. That's all the engineers, they deal with that. I do really enjoy actually trying to think real hard about how can we make things simple and easy? How can we make them intuitive? So that you can be productive. And that involves code on my side, because the product that I ship is frameworks like .NET libraries and code that people use. So I do get to keep a little bit of my coding skills. It's not too dull, I guess.
That sounds fantastic. It's nice that you can keep your coding skills up in your job. One of the latest things that you've been working on is Blazor, which is an experimental .NET web framework using C#, Razor, and HTML that runs in the browser with WebAssembly. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Blazor, and then we can dig into some more of the other stuff.
Sure. So Blazor, in a nutshell, is you can write in C# and have your code run in the browser. And you can build web UI using your .NET skills, your C# skills, and become a full-stack web developer with just .NET and C#, actually any other .NET language that you'd like to use. You can use F#, you can use whatever it can compile to .NET IL. And, you know, for me, Blazor, it's been a wonderful journey. I remember when I first came to the ASP.NET team, and I had a .NET background. I knew C#. I started trying to write some web apps. I played around with things like web forms and MVC, and I was like, okay, I get this. And then, you know, I need to go learn some JavaScript, because there's this whole other process, the browser process, that can do all these cool things. I need to be able to leverage that in my web applications. And I will admit that initially I was, I guess I would say, shocked and appalled to be quite honest. When I my first experience with JavaScript, I think when I started learning about was it function scope variables and everything's in the global namespace at the time. This was a little ways back, to be fair. A lot of stuff in the JavaScript world has honestly come a long way and has gotten much, much better. There's TypeScript now, there's, you know, ES6 and all the features there. But at the time, at least, it was hard. And it just was something that wasn't my strong point. Like I wasn't a JavaScript developer yet. And I began asking the question, like, could we actually make it so that I can instead write C# in the browser? Like, what prevents that? And for a long time, there really wasn't a good route to do that. There were lots of efforts where people tried to take, for example, C# and transpile it into JavaScript. Maybe you remember ScriptSharp, or there's actually quite a few little companies that build technologies in this space, like Duocode and Bridge.net. They do good stuff. But it's not really .NET, right? Like, you don't actually have a .NET assembly there. You can't just reference another binary and use it in the browser. And then this magical thing happened, which was WebAssembly. The browser folks got together and decided, you know, we should define a universal bytecode for the web that anyone can compile to. And that just changed everything. All of a sudden, now you can take any code and you can compile it to this thing called WebAssembly, and all the browsers now know how to run it, and they know how to run it at native speeds. So that was the thing where things just changed. And Steve Sanderson, he's a dev on the ASP.NET team. He was doing a talk, I think it was NDC in Oslo. I think it was last year. It was 2017, I think. And he was just playing around with features in the browser, things that you maybe didn't know browsers could do. And he decided, huh, there's this thing called WebAssembly. I'd like to talk about that. I wonder if I could get some C# code to run the browser through WebAssembly. And he found a little .NET runtime written in C. It was actually an open source one. It was called .NET Anywhere. Written at a guy that thinks at Google now. And he just ran that through the Inscription toolchain that can take C code and compile it to WebAssembly, and managed to get Hello World running in the browser for the first time, written in C#. And when people, he then started thinking, well, I know web frameworks. Steve's a JavaScript guy. He's not like me at all. He knows React and Vue and Angular and all these things. And he said, well, maybe I could build a little web framework on top of that. And that's how Blazor was born. Browser plus Razor is Blazor, is where the name originated. And it made quite an impression, both externally at the conference and also internally at Microsoft. And so we decided to kick off an experiment to see, well, how far can we take this? Is this something that we could really turn into a product? Would people want it? Would they even use it? Is it technically feasible? Like, these are all new technologies. We've never written a .NET runtime that runs on top of WebAssembly before. Is this possible? And so that's what we've been working on for the past few months, and it's been a blast. Like, it's been great. The reaction has been very positive. People have been very supportive, and it's just fun. It makes web development fun. I can now write code that runs in the browser using my own skill sets, and it's very enabling. It's great.
Yeah, for anyone who hasn't gone and watched Steve's demo, I highly encourage it. You make it sound kind of like he was dabbling, and to be honest, in the video, he makes it sound kind of like he was dabbling. But there is some pretty intense stuff in that demo, and he kind of breezes over all of it. Like, oh, I was just working on the weekend, and I kind of played around, and this happened.
Yeah, I was just watching something on Netflix, and I thought maybe I'll get .NET running in the browser tonight. You know, this is the thing of legends. Like, he does still. We ask him about it still. Like, Steve, like, how long did it really take? Like, really? Like, you were working on this for months, right? But he says it was about 10 days or so, you know, working in the evening, putting stuff together.
So kind of like JavaScript.
Exactly. Exactly. So the future is bright, right?
that means it's going to take over. This kind of thing would take me at least the better part of a year with all the free time that I might be able to scrounge up. It's an insane demo, and anybody that hasn't seen it should definitely go watch it. We'll have a link in the show notes. Okay, so you said that it takes part of .NET and turns it into a bytecode for WebAssembly. Can you go into a bit more detail about what that actually means?
Yeah, sure. So WebAssembly is just a low-level bytecode, right? Like, you don't usually write in WebAssembly. You compile code to WebAssembly. Okay, and then at that point, it runs in the browser at native speed. So a lot of the early WebAssembly demos, they're all taking like C and C++ code, compiling it to WebAssembly and getting it to work. Like, for games, for example, this makes a lot of sense, like a 3D rendering engine or something like that. Okay, so there's a couple of approaches you could do here. You could take your C# code and you could say, I'm just going to write something that takes C# code and compiles it to WebAssembly. That's one thing you could do, and that is something we are investigating. But that's not actually what we're currently doing with Blazor, at least not yet. With Blazor, what we did is we took a .NET runtime, which is basically a bunch of C and C++ code. You know, the CLR, the bottommost thing in the .NET stack that makes it work, the thing that knows how to run .NET instruction language, .NET IL. We took just the .NET runtime and compiled that to WebAssembly. So now you have a .wasm file, a WebAssembly file that you can execute in the browser, and that thing knows how to now run .NET assemblies, .NET DLLs. And then the Blazor runtime handles downloading your DLLs for your app. You take your code, you compile C# to just normal DLLs, and you can download the DLLs into the browser, point the WebAssembly-based .NET runtime at those DLLs, and just execute them. Just like you would on Windows or with .NET Core on a Mac or in Linux, you have an underlying OS, if you will, a .NET runtime on top that abstracts a bunch of things for you, and then you run .NET code on top of that. That's literally what we're doing with Blazor, except the platform, the OS, is the browser. And the .NET runtime is, instead of being implemented in, like, you know, originally in C, it's now implemented in WebAssembly. And then you just run .NET DLLs on top of that. That's how it works.
That's amazing. I'm assuming that because the portable nature of the browser and the limited resources that you would have access to once in the browser, do these assemblies have to be .NET standard?
Yeah, so we support .NET standard 2.0. So any .NET standard 2.0 can be used in a Blazor app with some limitations. So there are things in, if you, I guess it might help to actually say a bit about what .NET standard is, because I think there's still a bunch of folks that we say .NET standard and then like, they don't know what that means. So .NET standard is a API specification, right? It's a bunch of the .NET base class library types and APIs that we have said, okay, these APIs we are going to support in all the .NETs, and we're going to slap a version number on that thing and call that .NET standard. And what that means is for library authors, if you're writing a library that you want to share with other people, you can target .NET standard, and then that library will now work wherever that version of .NET standard is supported. And .NET standard 2.0 is the latest version of .NET standard that is supported in .NET Core and .NET Framework and in Mono and in Xamarin and all these places. It's implemented all over the place. That's the latest version, and it has a pretty broad set of APIs. It's pretty nice. So we support .NET Standard 2.0 in Blazor apps. That said, there are some APIs in .NET Standard 2.0 that just don't make sense in a browser. Like, they just can't be made to work. Like, you're not going to be able to access the Windows registry from a Blazor application running in the browser. Yeah, I know. It disappoints many people. But there's also even more basic things, though, like file I/O, like just being able to arbitrarily access the file system. That's also something you can't do in a browser, right? So the way we handle that is all the APIs in Blazor, the .NET standard APIs that don't work on that platform, they just throw platform not supported exceptions. So you do need to test. Like, take your .NET standard libraries, you can reference them from your Blazor applications, you can use them, and then you need to test it and make sure that, you know, you're not doing anything weird that just fundamentally can't work in a browser. But other than that, .NET standard 2.0 is supported. So most of your existing libraries, as long as they're not doing anything really platform specific, should just work.
Nice. Blazor is still labeled as an experiment or experimental on the GitHub repository as well. Is that correct?
Yes, it's still an experiment, not for production use. Don't put Blazor in production just yet. The reason why it's an experiment is, like I said, we're still working through, like, what does it mean to run .NET in the browser? We're just gauging customer interest. I think at this point we've seen quite a bit of customer interest, so we have some good signal there. But, you know, please keep trying it out. Let us know if you like it. That every bit of data in that regard helps. But then just all the technical issues, like getting debugging working. We don't have debugging working yet in the browser. We have prototypes of that working, but for the existing like shipped Blazor bits, we still need to enable that. A bunch of other things along that vein, in that direction. App download size, like getting the size of the app that you download to be a reasonable size payload so that the load time doesn't take forever. There's still a bunch of investigation and work to be done in that space. All these types of things. So it's an experiment right now. It's not even committed yet as a product. We don't know yet if this will ever even become something that's supported and that you can use. So the reason why it's available now is just for trying it out, giving us feedback, letting us know how what you think of the experience. And you know, in the next month or two, we'll be looking at all the data we've got so far, and we'll start to make a call about what does the future look like for Blazor. But for right now, it's just experimental. Don't use it in production just yet.
So put it in production right now.
So kind of along those same lines of, you know, when you're talking about what people are using this for, or what people are excited about this for.
Yeah. So it is interesting. There's a bunch of things there. You know, there is one set of folks, honestly, that is just super happy to not have to write JavaScript. I want to be clear. I know initially when I first had that reaction to JavaScript, it wasn't great. I didn't have a great initial JavaScript experience. But at this point, I'm really not a JavaScript hater. Like, I think the JavaScript ecosystem has a lot that .NET should learn from. Like, their open source ecosystem is amazing. The amount of innovation that happens in the JavaScript world, I would love to have that for .NET. But there are a bunch of folks that just don't want to write JavaScript, and they'd like to be able to use their .NET skill set. And Blazor enables them to do that. And they're just really happy that I can now use. JavaScript does have a problem where, like, I think a lot of people refer to it as JavaScript fatigue, where because there's so much innovation, it moves really fast. And people often feel like, well, I just learned, I don't know, whether it was jQuery, or I just learned Angular 1, and I got to learn Angular 2. No, it's React, and I got to learn, you know, so forth. That it's always changing, that they never really feel like they've actually learned what they need to know. They've never really, you know, come to the point where they can say, I'm now a competent developer in this space. And one of the things we really hope to do with Blazor is give you the stability and consistency of .NET, but on both sides of the wire, in the client, in the browser. And I think people appreciate that. They like the idea of they can now do full stack development. They can share code. You can write a .NET standard class library, and you can use it in the client, but also you could use it server side. So maybe you have like some domain types that you want to share on both sides of the wire, or some validation logic that you want to share on both sides of the wire. When we set you up with a Blazor app, we have a template actually where it's got three projects. Like there's the client side project, which is your Blazor app. You have the server side project, which is just an ASP.NET Core app that hosts the Blazor app. Blazor apps are just a bunch of static files, right? So you just need something that can host them and serve them as static files. But then you have a third project, which is just a shared class library that's referenced from both. So you can have shared code that gets used by both of the other projects. So people like that. And then, you know, the tooling is where we're actually spending quite a bit of time and hope to differentiate. Having just amazing IntelliSense in your CSHTML files, completions and IntelliSense and tooltips, all that stuff, like the Razor editing experience that we've got even at this early in the preview stage, I think is pretty nice. I often find when I'm writing in a Blazor component for the first time that it almost like writes itself, like everything's just completing for me. It's amazing. It's the devs that have been working on it have done a great job, and we hope to actually have that cross platform soon. Like, we're working on trying to get a great cross platform tooling story in like VS for Mac, and then hopefully eventually in VS Code. So those are things that people are saying that they really like. Reusable Blazor components was something we did in this last release, where you can write, we were talking about web forms earlier. I don't know if it was before the recording started or after, but web forms had this notion of a control that you could package up some UI and share it. Blazor has a very similar concept of a component. And we made it really easy to build libraries of components in this last release. And so people are starting to do some cool stuff, like package up Bootstrap 4 components with like basically a .NET facade around them, or charting components, or whatever you want. We have a dev right now who's working on the SignalR client, so you can do real-time communication with the server through a .NET-like API, but running in the browser. That's something we hope to make available in our next Blazor update.
I would almost think that'd be easier than doing the JavaScript portion of SignalR, where you had the current way that you would interact with it, where you have to have the JavaScript chunk that you put on your page.
Yeah, you get a C# .NET strongly typed API for your SignalR client when you're running in the browser. I don't want to promise too much yet because I haven't even seen it yet. They're working on it, but I expect it to be pretty nice. Very similar to what you get with using the .NET SignalR client in other applications, like from a mobile app.
There has been a lot of discussion out on the web and on Twitter and other social media avenues after the initial announcement of the Blazor experiment. There seems to be a fear that this might be the next Silverlight. Can you speak to that?
Sure. I think that fear is like, is this thing really gonna stick around? Like, is it gonna disappear on us? Is it gonna be supported for the long haul? And I think that's a totally legitimate concern. And it's honestly one of the reasons why we're being a little conservative as we move forward with Blazor. Like, we're calling it an experiment. We're not saying like, okay, we're gonna ship this thing quite yet, because we wanna be sure that it lines up, that the technology works out. I can say that one of the areas that we hope that Blazor will add value is that stability and consistency. And so if we're going to do this, the thing that makes the most sense is that we ship Blazor, and it's something that you can use in the long run. Like, if we decide to take Blazor to be a product, part of that story really has to be that this isn't something that you can use for 2 years and then it's out of support. Like, we want it to be something that you can use for a long period of time and bet on as a platform. And to make sure that we can land at that spot as a product, that's why we're doing this footwork as, you know, first let's do an experiment, let's make sure people want it, let's make sure the technology works out and so forth. But I hear those concerns, and I can tell you that I don't want to do that. And I don't want Blazor to become something that just, you know, disappears after a couple years and when you've made a big investment in it. We want it to be something that you can bet on for a long time.
Well, and hopefully it stays as open source as it is now. And then even if Microsoft did decide to drop it, the community could keep it going.
That's true. That is a benefit with Blazor. The whole project is open source. It's on GitHub. You can go and build it yourself. You can build the tooling yourself. So even if it does not pan out for whatever reason, knock on wood, I don't think that will happen. But just in case, you can always have the code and build it yourself. That was one of the things with Silverlight that a lot of people really wanted Microsoft to do, to open source the Silverlight bits, and it never quite happened. With Blazor, that's already done. You already have the source code at your fingertips, and we actually have quite an active community of folks that follow along with the builds. They're building themselves. We've had a lot of really nice pull requests and contributions from the community, adding features and adding improvements. Several of the features that we did in our last Blazor release came from the community. So a lot of benefit there from being open source.
Yeah, it looks like there's currently 12 pull requests awaiting completion and 97 issues currently in GitHub.
That would mean that one was resolved while we've been on this call, because it was 98 when I looked.
Because it's an experiment, you know, the keeping up with the enthusiasm is difficult. Like, it's not a large team, honestly, right now that's working. The way the project was pitched was, let's take, you know, a small set of key resources, you know, Steve and folks that we can build something out for people to try and see how that goes. And it's been great to see how the community has rallied around it, but it is quite a bit it does take quite a bit of effort to keep up with all the issues and, you know, the discussion on Gitter and all these things. But we do our best, because the more we can get that feedback and hear what people are saying, the better we can make the product.
Yeah, it looks like the 0.10 release was about a month ago yesterday. There was a 0.20 release 6 days ago, a 0.21 release 3 days after that. So it seems like it's really moving fast.
Yeah, we aspire to have a release. We originally aspired to have a release out about every 2 weeks. The 0.2 release got delayed a bit, not so much because of Blazor, but because we take dependencies on some other preview releases as well. Like, to use Blazor today, you need the latest preview version of Visual Studio, and you also need the latest preview version of the .NET Core SDK. And we have instructions on how to get those and get set up with those. And in fact, for 0.2, we needed the new, there's a new feature in ASP.NET Core called the Razor SDK, which makes it really easy to take CSHTML files and compile them in a library. Usually you have CSHTML files or Razor files in an app. The Razor SDK makes it really easy to have them in just a library, which we needed for Blazor to have like component libraries. So we were dependent on their release, and there was a little bit of delay in getting the 2.1 .NET Core Preview 2 SDK out. Hopefully for 0.3, we'll be able to turn that around a little faster. We're planning that one for like the first week in May.
So is Blazor driving any of these updates in the preview versions of the SDKs, or is it just magic that these things are happening right when Blazor needs them?
There is some collaboration there. I would say the trains are for the most part independent, but because a lot of the investments we need for Blazor generally apply to Razor and Razor tooling all up, There is quite a bit of synergy there. So like as we invest in things in Blazor, that trickles into the Razor stack and the Razor tooling stack, which then helps things like ASP.NET Core MVC, ASP.NET Core Razor Pages. So there is some collaboration, but for the most part, Blazor is an out-of-band release. It's separate from the .NET Core train. We just happen to use stuff that they ship, and they add a lot of value to what we're able to do in the Blazor space.
Awesome. Because it just seems like, you know, like a year ago, there's no way that Blazor could have worked, even though like it works in IE 11 without WebAssembly or anything. The tooling and everything else had to happen or else Blazor couldn't happen. And it's all just kind of coming together fantastically.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of stars have aligned to make this this release possible, which is great. Like it makes it fun and exciting to be a part of.
Do you guys have anything else in the pipeline? Should we be expecting anything at build or just keep on hoping for now?
Yeah, sure. So we just shipped 0.2. New things that were in 0.2, we enabled auto build on save. Like a lot of people, when they're doing front-end development, they expect to be able to edit their files to save them and then just refresh the browser and see the changes. With Blazor, there is a build step. Like we'll take your Blazor component files, your CSHTML files, they get compiled into a .NET assembly, and those get then downloaded into the browser and executed. So you need to build them first. In 0.1 of Blazor, you had to manually rebuild, and then you could rerun the app and see the changes. In 0.2, you just change your CSHTML file. We'll detect that change, kick off the build in the background, and then you just go refresh the browser, and then it will refresh once the build is complete. We also did the work to add a project template to make it really easy to do Blazor component libraries. And also libraries that do JavaScript interop. One of the cool things about Blazor and WebAssembly is any browser API that you want to use, like core browser functionality, like ambient light sensor or geolocation APIs, you can use any of those APIs through a JavaScript interop layer. Also, you can call into arbitrary JavaScript libraries. Like if you have a JavaScript library that you need to use in your application, there's an interop layer that you can use to call into those libraries basically as if they were written in C#. And in 0.2, we made some templates to make it really easy to build NuGet packages that wrap JavaScript APIs or browser APIs with a .NET wrapper that anyone can then just add to their project and use. We also did a bunch of improvements to our HTTP client in Blazor. When you want to make an HTTP request to the server, you just use a normal .NET HTTP client. And under the covers, we do that JavaScript interop trick to have a special message handler that talks to the Fetch API. And that's how your requests actually go. It's calling into a browser API to do it, but you just get to interact with what looks like a normal HTTP client. There are some improvements that were made around like preserving cookies for same origin requests, enabling authentication scenarios by allowing you to pass through arguments to the underlying Fetch API, and then some improvements to the JSON serialization. We also did some improvements around data binding and event handling syntax. That's what we did in 0.2. In 0.3, which is the next release, the big investments that we're looking at there, we really would like to have cross-platform tooling. So we're going to continue to chase Visual Studio for Mac is where we're looking at first. Visual Studio for Mac just got Razor tooling support in their latest preview releases. And so we're trying to build the Razor tooling, the Blazor tooling on top of that. We'll have to see. It's preview bits on top of preview bits. So we got to see if we can get those things to come together. But we're gonna try. No commitment on that one for 0.3. But it's we'll at least keep plugging at it. And if it happens to land, we'll definitely ship that as soon as it's available. Async event handlers is something we're gonna do for 0.3. Templated components. If you're familiar with like XAML-based stacks like WPF or Xamarin, you often write templated controls. Like imagine a drop-down list or a grid where you basically have a template that you want to stamp out for each item in some enumeration or whatever that that then is used to render that control. We're working on having a similar style functionality, but in a Blazor component. What else? The SignalR client we already talked about. More Blazor component library work. Steve right now is experimenting with building the Bootstrap 4 component library, and that's fleshing out a whole bunch of issues with the component model. So that's been good. So that hopefully will enable more interesting component libraries. Debugging support is still something we're chasing. That's honestly something that we need from the .NET runtime folks for them to land. And it's still not clear yet if they're going to have something available for us to use in the 0.3 timeframe. But we'll keep pushing on that. And then download size optimizations. In 0.1, we did work where we will, when you after we've built your app, we will do kind of like what you do in JavaScript with tree shaking. Except it's more like IL stripping in a Blazor application. We'll go through all the DLLs and strip out all of the instructions that aren't actually being used by anyone based off of static analysis. And that dramatically reduces the size of the downloaded application. We did that in 0.1, but it's just sort of the tip of the iceberg. Like, there's a bunch of other optimizations we want to do. Like the core WebAssembly file that we download is still pretty beefy. We'd love to trim down that file that contains the actual .NET runtime. Things that I know we can do there, like at that file has debugging infrastructure in it already that we hope to be able to use eventually someday. But when you publish your app to like production, you don't need it. So when you publish your Blazor app, you could certainly strip out all the debugging code that's in the WebAssembly file. And there's probably also a bunch of base class library enablement code in that WebAssembly file that we could strip out as well. So that's just general download size improvements is another broad area that we hope to get some time to look into for 0.3. So those are the big investments, and people are already plugging away at them. I'm just gonna check my list, see if I missed anything. I actually just prior to this podcast, I was reviewing the list with management to make sure they were cool. The ahead of time compilation investigations. I remember at the beginning I talked about that what we do right now is we download just normal DLLs into the browser and then execute them using this WebAssembly based runtime. But it is possible just to take all the code and just say let's just compile it all to WebAssembly. And see how that works. We don't actually know how that will work, but the .NET folks have infrastructure for doing it. In 0.3, we hope to try it out. See does it reduce the download size? Does it make things faster? Does it make things slower? We don't know. We need to try it out. That's why this is an experiment. So we hope to do some of those investigations in the 0.3 timeframe as well.
Awesome. Yeah.
One thing that I know that I'm kind of looking for is being able to have an actual code behind for the CSHTML. And I think I saw that mentioned somewhere that it was something that was going to happen. Any idea when that's going to be worked on?
It's going to happen. I don't know if it's going to happen for 0.3. Well, what I can tell you is that you can actually do it today. Like, there is a model for it today. It's an inheritance-based model right now. And actually, we just I just finished reviewing the documentation for this for our documentation site at blazor.net. What you do is you define a code behind file, and it's just a C# class that derives from Blazor component. And then in your CSHTML file, where you're defining like the UI defining where you want all the data binding to occur and so forth, you put a special razor directive at the top that's like @inherits. So @inherits, and then you put the class name that you defined that derives from Blazor component. And then all the members of that base class, basically, which is what you just defined in the code behind file, will be available from the CSHTML file. So that works right now. You can do that today if that's a pattern that you prefer, where you, instead of having a functions block live in the CSHTML file, you'd rather it be in a C# file. You can do that. The feature that we want to do is to make it a partial class-based model instead of a derivation-based model, where you just define a partial class that has the same name as the CSHTML file. And then those things get wired together. We have some blocking issues right now with the way tooling works to get that to work correctly. We get some like duplicate types defined. I won't bore you with details. So we're not sure we can actually get those blocking issues resolved in time for the 0.3 release. But at least in the meantime, you can do it if you prefer that pattern. The reason why we currently don't use that pattern is when we talk to folks in like the Vue community in particular, like Vue.js, they feel that having that code and the markup live together is actually a good pattern. That you can see how things are related. That the separation is in some sense a bit artificial. That said, when I talk to customers, like one of my jobs as PM is to ask people what they think, and about half of them say no, I really really want a code behind file. So we will do it.
Yeah, for me, I want kind of like a MVP pattern, model view presenter, and then I would have the presenter code be separate. That way, because Blazor is experimental, there's a lot of changes happening. And if I put a whole bunch of code in the actual page, then there might be a change to Blazor that makes that act funny or not do what I want, or maybe there's a better way. Whereas if I keep it separate, I feel like I can be a bit more flexible.
Yeah, I hear on that one. I think also like a big selling factor for me is all of the tooling experience that you get around C# files, like refactoring, and like there's just a bunch of stuff that like Roslyn and Visual Studio knows how to do already with C# files. When you get into a CSHTML file, we've done a ton of work to try and make the same things work there. But the reality is that not everything works. Like you can't do refactoring gestures, for example, in a CSHTML file. But you could if it was in a CS file. So those types of things do light up. And I think there's a sort of a sense of trust. Like, well, I know what C# code looks like in a CS file. I'm not sure what it really means when it's in the CSHTML file thing. Can I please just put it in a C# file because it looks like C# to me? We will absolutely support it. It may even become guidance that that's the best way to do things. Don't know yet. At least for the time being, though, you can use the inherits pattern. And we'll have documentation on how to do that so you can see that.
Okay.
Well, I think I am pretty excited about Blazor. I can say that for sure.
You should all try it out. If you haven't installed it already, you should. It installs cleanly side by side. I know a lot of people, they get nervous because of all the preview releases that we depend on. But everything we depend on installs cleanly side by side. Visual Studio is amazing. Like I have like 4 versions of Visual Studio on my machine. I've got stable, I've got preview, I've got some crazy internal preview build, and I've never had an issue.
It's yeah, but amazing. That's like 60 gigs of data.
And I have a really big SSD drive.
No. Ash, even though tooling isn't fully supported in Visual Studio Code, you can skip a lot of that download just by using Visual Studio Code.
You can. You'll still need to get the preview SDK. Like you'll want to get the preview.NET Core SDK. But again, that's a side-by-side install with the stable version of the .NET Core SDK. They don't affect each other at all. Very safe thing to do. So I on my work laptop, where I do my day job, have all these bits installed, and it works just fine. So yeah, definitely give it a spin. It's super fun to try out. We have some nice tutorials on Blazor.net that you can go through, and we're adding more as time goes on. You can build your first to-do list app with Blazor. People have been doing amazing things. I had a guy who built a Blazor user interface for controlling a electronic Christmas tree using a Raspberry Pi. It was super sweet. Pokemon and Blazor. I've seen Pokemon and Blazor. There was an app where someone built an app that would like search through the lyrics of Vocaloid music. I've never even heard of Vocaloid music before, but apparently Vocaloid music is like synthesized singing music. Have you heard this?
There's a digital Japanese singer artist that is 100% synthesized.
Yes, completely Vocaloid. So, you know, lots of fun stuff that people are already doing with Blazor code today. And yeah, and you can too. It's really easy to get started. You should definitely download and install it today if you haven't already.
Awesome. I'll probably have to do that when we get done here. So to go in another direction, one of the things we kind of try to ask about from all the people that we interview is to try to give them opportunity to kind of speak to people that are new and up and coming and say, you know, if you could talk to these people, what would be your piece of advice for people just getting into the industry?
Just getting into the industry. That's a great question. I mean, I like to stick to first principles, like just get good at something. And, you know, keep practicing. Like, I do believe in the whole growth mindset movement. Like, don't be discouraged by, like, if you're not, you know, the absolute best .NET programmer from the get-go. Like, you're going to make mistakes and your code's not going to be perfect. And the best way to make it better is to go ahead and submit that pull request. Go ahead and publish that repository and put a website up and tell people about it. And let the criticism come and take it and then learn from it. I would say just keep trying, keep practicing, keep doing. That is the best way to learn. And as you keep sticking to it trying to work on things that you know are just the right direction, that stuff will start to stick. And people will just learn to respect and grow and appreciate the work that you're trying to do. So that's what I would do. That's what I try to do every day. And I make tons of mistakes and I try to learn from them.
Awesome. Sounds like some excellent advice. How can our listeners keep up with you and kind of track the progress of Blazor?
Yeah, so we try to be really open and transparent. We blog all the major announcements on the web dev blog, on the ASP.NET team blog. So msdn.microsoft.com/webdev. So that's definitely a place where you'll see the major announcements like releases. If you want to chat with us, we're on the Blazor Gitter, and you can find that by going to the Blazor GitHub repo. So if you just go to github.com/ASP.NET/Blazor, that's where all the code is. And if you have feedback or suggestions, you can file issues there. If you just want to chat about stuff or you're having trouble and you want the community to help you out, join us in the Gitter chat room. We have actually a very active set of folks there that are helping people out and getting them unblocked, whether it's building the repo or trying to build an app with the shipped bits. There's a set of folks on Stack Overflow now. Stack Overflow is starting to pick up in Blazor. You can post issues there as well. And we tweet updates also through the ASP.NET Twitter feed. That's the main source of updates through the Twitter sphere. And that's what I would recommend listening on. The last one I would also recommend is we do try to do a fairly regular update on the ASP.NET community stand-up, which is like once every 2 weeks, we'll do like a Google Hangout where we'll just talk about what's going on the ASP.NET team. And we record them and put them on YouTube so you can watch them whenever you want. We've done a couple of them for Blazor already, and we'll do more as things progress in Blazor. So they're interactive as well. So you can ask questions about me if I happen to be on it, or my boss, Damian Edwards, and find out what's really going on the ASP.NET team. So that's on live.asp.net is the website for that.
Excellent. Excellent.
Thank you, Daniel. We appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today.
My pleasure. It's been great fun. Thank you for having me on.
That was Daniel Roth. Daniel is a senior program manager on the ASP.NET team. His passion include delighting customers by making frameworks simple and easy to use in the cloud.
If you liked this episode, please like, rate, and review on iTunes.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter @SixFigureDev.
This has been another episode of the Six Figure Developer Podcast, helping others reach their potential. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash.